Welcome back to another episode of Conversations with Nova Reid. Another week, my beauty, another week. It is Mental Health Awareness Week at the time of recording this. So checking in, how are you feeling? How are you doing? Just let that question percolate and really answer honestly. So often we just automatically say we're fine, even when we're not. And I'm finding it, I'm really intolerant to that at the moment. And I'm answering that question honestly when someone asks me. And I really hope that that continues post these curious times. But before I get into the episode today, I must thank my founding Patreon members. I've got a little community growing over on Patreon. If this is the first time you're hearing about it, I created a Patreon on request from some of you who want to support the work that I do in another way. Doing these podcasts is incredibly time consuming. I do them on my own and I'm not a great editor. What I would really love to do is be able to start outsourcing this, especially when we move out of CB19, because I just won't have the capacity to continue them in that way. And I know you're loving them, so it's a way that if you are able to support at a very low priced cost to keep these podcasts going and to support the work that I do so it continues to remain sustainable, because at the moment it's not. So if you want to find out more, I'm going to leave the links in my show notes regarding the Patreon. But a big great big welcome and thank you to the founding members who have supported this episode. So it is Mental Health Awareness Week, and the theme this year is kindness. And I'm going to go into the theme in a moment, but I go in and out of whether I love Mental Health Awareness Week or not, because whilst I think it's great that it pulls focus and it gets us talking about mental health, which is still relatively got stigma attached to it, asking for help and so forth. But ultimately, these are things that we should be doing for each other as human beings and doing for ourselves on a regular basis to maintain and support our ability to show up in the world, our ability to parent, our ability to work, our ability to just be, and not preserve it for just one week. But it does keep conversations arising and, you know, drawing focus is something that we all experience. We're all on a spectrum of being in positive mental health and experiencing mental ill health, the same as we are on a spectrum with physical health. And I think that that's the conversation that can, you know, it can't do any harm, continue to have it. The theme this year is kindness, and I'm a lover of random acts of kindness. I'm also aware of how kindness can be used as a method to bypass and silence people, black and brown people, people talking about social injustice, especially people are talking about racism, as a way to, oh, just be kind when you start speaking up on issues that matter. To me, kindness is holding space for someone, just deeply, deeply listening without trying to interject. To me, kindness is asking a friend how they are and actually receiving their honest reply. To me, kindness is checking in with a friend when you notice that there is so much violence and atrocities being rolled out in the news on a marginalised community, reaching out to that friend who might be black and in that community and asking them if they're okay because they've seen the news. To me, kindness is doing a random act of kindness, sending a treat in the post to someone just to let them know that you care about them and you're thinking of them. To me, kindness is dedicating and volunteering your time. Kindness is allowing somebody to be themselves without apology, something that happens so often for people of colour and black people. To me, kindness is ultimately doing something that serves something greater than you, something outside of yourself, like anti-racism work. All of these things, like studies show that doing a random act of kindness has a positive impact not only on our well-being but also the receiver. So to me, if we want to use anti-racism work, we're in the business of that on this podcast, doing something that is outside of yourself not only serves a bigger cause, but it can have a positive response in the psychological and emotional well-being of the receiver. So much of my anti-racism work is weaving in mental health, because we often think, especially in corporate entities, we talk about this in this podcast actually, we think of racism as a separate thing, as a diversity and inclusion issue or something else that's outside of well-being. But actually, if you've been following me in my work, you will know that racism is a form of trauma. And of course, that has a detrimental impact on psychological well-being. So doing this work, doing anti-racism work, is to aid collective healing. Not just for other people who experience racism, RE, black people and people of colour, but also ourselves. It's about something bigger than us. A lot of the work that I teach on my anti-racism course is not about just keeping your well-being safe, because anti-racism work can be hugely anxiety provoking. It can trigger perhaps trauma that we have around conflict or around anger or around other things that have gone on in our life that prevent us from being a good ally. There's a huge amount of anti-racism work that requires us to be self-aware, and that's looking after our well-being. It's prioritising self-care, building resilience, meeting our needs. And I go into this in detail in my full anti-racism course, and it also forms some of the components of courageous courage, about managing our own anxiety, about building resilience so that we can build confidence and be a better ally. We're not, as human beings, we're multifaceted. And it's about, to me, wellness, positive mental well-being is looking at individuals as human beings and recognising all of the things that impact us and that affect our ability to thrive and show up in the world. And for some of us, for many of us, that's racism. And so in this podcast episode with Chloe Davis, who's head of PR and partnerships at an organisation called My G Work, we start to talk about the importance of organisations or employers really start to look at us as individual human beings with differing needs, and what they're going to start to do to look after their staff in terms of their well-being, and to start looking at us as individuals who are all coming from different starting points to better serve us so that we can better show up in the workplace and thrive, and to start treating racism like a public health issue rather than a diversity inclusion add-on. We cover so much ground in this episode. We also talk about the impact, being a black woman and the impact that can have on our mental health. And at the time of recording, so yesterday was the 19th of May, which is the second year anniversary of Meghan and Harry, Chloe and I spoke about Meghan's mental health and the impact of being a woman of colour in the British monarchy and receiving the amount of scrutiny, microaggressions and racism that she did being in that entity. And there was a documentary that Harry and Meghan did not long before they announced that they would be leaving. And the reporter asked her how she was doing and how this stuff was affecting her. And you could see she was just a shadow of herself. Like, regardless of where you sit in society, microaggressions, racism, the relentless abuse that comes with it, especially when you're of a certain ranking, it seeps into your mental health. You know, nobody is immune to it. And just the impact of, you know, being a strong woman, like as many of us are, we've had to be, as black women, these strong, resilient beings. We've generally had no choice because we've had to in order to survive. How this stuff seeps in. So Chloe speaks a lot about that, a lot about being a black woman and the impact that she has had from, you know, learning to love who you are, to be yourself unapologetically, and the detrimental impact that just simply being yourself that can have on the way people start interacting with you in a negative way. Yeah, that's profound. We also talk about racism in the LGBTQ community. Oh yes, we do. We're going in. And we cover so much ground. We spend a lot of time talking about mental health, and we're also covering reproductive health and polycystic ovary syndrome. So we are diving in. It's a rich conversation. We probably could have talked for 2 hours, but I had to end it at some point. But enjoy it. Breathe it in. Yeah, over to the episode. I am delighted to be bringing another wonderful human being with me today. Welcome the incredible Chloe Davies, who is Head of PR and Partnerships at MyGWork. Chloe, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for asking me to join you. I've been loving listening to your interviews. I'm delighted to be a guest myself.
Ooh. You know what? This has been bugging me, Chloe. Where did we meet? I feel like I've always known you and I can't remember.
I actually think it was the wonderful world of social media. I think we just randomly started following each other, I think maybe about 4 or 5 years ago now. And it only really kind of came into sliding into DMs and having conversation. I think in like impactful posts, we were talking about representation and work and what it means to be Black women. Mm. And then I think we actually started working together properly about 2 years ago. You asked me to do an interview. Mm. And it's those 6 degrees of finding out how many other people that we knew each other and vice versa and how connected we are. So
I just feel like you've always been there now, so it's wrecking my brain. So let's dig in. I like to go right on in. So who are you, Chloe, beyond your role?
I am a mother of two. I have two beautiful little boys who are 12 weeks into a quarantine. Ooh. And they have had enough breaking out, we deadbolting the door because my eldest has let himself out into the garden for some alone time. I am a daughter. You know, I've got really great parents, so it's been, family has kind of been really grounding in this time more than anything. God, who else am I? I never answer this question about myself, but it's always really interesting to be heard describe myself. I'm a Black woman.
You are indeed.
So I'm learning so much about myself in these moments of silence, in these moments of violence, unfortunately. Mm. You know, in the work and in allyship and seeing how people interact with each other, what we need, what we don't necessarily need, and what we demand now. And I think the time for demanding is now. I'm a friend, community, the work that we do that's important, but is as a collective. You know, it's never one voice supersedes others. It's a chorus of voices. Mm. I'm discovering so much more. You know, today is the start of Mental Health Awareness Week. And so for someone who is very vocal about, you know, my mental health journey, that I'm a survivor, it lives with me, I don't live with it. Mm. And what that means in usualizing the conversations around how we deal with our own mental health, especially at a time like now, which, you know, as for one identity of mine, is quite triggering. You know, it's like being back in the closet, and I've been openly out for a very long time. Mm. You know, it's about those hidden secret things that we're not necessarily open about, but get triggered in lockdown and in isolation and in them not being allowed to be.
Yeah.
You know, we understand what freedom truly means when you come from a more marginalized background. So to not be able to access true freedom really, really has an impact. And so I'm trying to be more honest about that.
Mm. That's a beautiful answer. Thank you. Yeah. It, whilst we're there, we may as well just dig right on in. One of the things I was worried about right at the early stages of lockdown and not really living in that space, one of the first things I worried about and the first things I said is that there's going to be a mental health crisis. And I really worry about that. So what, you know, you aligned it with your identity around coming out. So can you talk more about that intersect, about how not being free right now is exacerbating?
For many people who identify as LGBTQ+, the journey of coming out, of being your whole self, being honest and being true and sharing that with people you work with, friends, family, is really freeing. It means you get to live in your truth.
Of course.
So in these moments of isolation where, and it affects all of us, where there are people who have had real, genuine, beautiful coming out experiences where they've been fully accepted, where there are people who haven't, you know, their families have disowned them, where there are people where the only way that they are free and they are seen are the people that they work with. They might now be in situations, in places of isolation that aren't necessarily safe.
Of course.
It's not being able to, you know, go to meet with your chosen family and interact with the people that see you and accept you and have those moments of relief to breathe. It might be being very open in the workplace. And so that's how you balance your lived experience, because when you go home, you have to go back into the closet, because culturally where you come from, due to faith, religion, heritage, you know, your LGBT identity is not accepted. And all of that is being compounded by, you know, a set of rules that we should all be, you know, all should be adhering to as a nation, but not understanding the impact psychologically that will have on a person being told you are not allowed. And it's that simple part of you are not allowed that's triggering for so many, of not being able to do anything about it, because responsibly and safety wise, staying safe and staying home is the necessary. So it's how are we managing those conversations that we are having internally in our heads? Some of us are sharing with each other.
Good.
But again, if you are a single person on a single journey of your identity, that you haven't been comfortable and confident enough in sharing with somebody else, then only these conversations are in your head. And as we all know, our heads, whilst they are our heads, might not necessarily be the safest places. So it is, moments of awareness like today, that even the strongest of us, we are all struggling. And I've been mindful in the passing privilege that I have through my role and, you know, my community roles, at every opportunity to mention to people, especially HR, you know, D&I professionals, HR professionals, when we're talking about LGBT inclusion, I have always said, and what is your practice and premise for well-being now? What have you, are you thinking about? How are you supporting your employees through this transitional period? But also, as we come out of quarantine and we move back into more human interactive spaces, how are you going to deal with the sensation of being overwhelmed? With the sensation of being near someone else for the very first time in your office, even if it's socially distanced, knowing that for the last 12 weeks, the majority of, the last 8 to 12 weeks, the majority of the public, they haven't seen maybe more than one or two people. So how do you deal with, if and when we are allowed to travel through public transport, what the impact of that, maybe one-hour journey for many, how do you actually even do the work that you're being employed to do when you've gone through that experience? And the level of anxiety that is running rampant through everyone, in a way that anxiousness and being, you know, and having anxiety never used to impact on people before, but has only come out of this pandemic. I think these are things that people who have a responsibility for other people, who line manage other people, need to actively be thinking about when they think about how we then transition back into work.
Absolutely.
And what support everyone, including ourselves, and being honest enough about ourselves, will need when we come back in, when we come back into those spaces. You know, I'm so excited for being able to be at an event again.
Yes.
But I'm also so anxious about what will that mean being in a collective group of people.
Yes.
And will everyone be safe? And how will we navigate and how will we move? And so it's the responsibilities and the things we enjoy from our roles. You know, I'm fortunate, I have a job that I really love, but still that underlying anxiety of how will I effectively and safely do my role?
Yeah.
In a way that safety in our roles, I don't think ever came to play before. It wasn't a sentence we used.
It wasn't. And I think you might be a certain exception to the rule, but there are many corporate entities who are not looking at their staff like individual human beings.
Yeah.
And they have to now, because if your workforce is not in a position where they feel safe and they can function, then that starts having a knock-on effect on outcome. And I was going to park this till later, but it's coming now, so we'll just do it
okay.
now.
I'm ready.
But I talk about this a lot in terms of racism being a public health issue, and that many corporate employers don't look at racism like a public health, like a well-being issue. It's seen as something separate. It's seen as a D&I thing that you can solve with one bias workshop and then that's the end of it. They're not thinking about how these everyday forms of discrimination and microaggressions are impacting us. And that's just if we're in one minority identity, not compounded by all the other ones that we intersect with. And so though these conversations now I'm finding really interesting, because it's now you're starting to have to look at your staff as individual human beings who all have their own well-being needs that are going to need to be met more than ever, because fear and anxiety is contagious.
Yep, absolutely.
It's absolutely contagious. Right, I'm going to backtrack. Go on.
No, but it's those things that we don't say and aren't seen. And you know, I now more than ever, you know, these are things that our, and when I say our community, I say as Black and brown people, regardless of however else you identify, adversity, this is not our first journey down the road of adversity.
Correct.
And so in these settings, we are familiar with the paths in which we are navigating, even if we don't know which path that's on. We know the basic set of rules. And it's now that the mainstream, so other identities and everybody else, are understanding what true adversity means.
Yes.
The impact, regardless of where you identify in your own stream, that actually this is a collective level playing field for everybody, because we are all being told the same thing. The difference is the impact.
Yes.
And it's how you are.
Same. Yeah.
And how we are approaching the impact. But, you know, this is from a time of, I think, to a year ago, you know, just over a year ago, where the fact that my identity as a parent and a working parent may be in question to my ability to do my job.
Yes.
And now the entire world is working from home.
Yeah.
So the fact that I may have been discriminated against as a parent, forget that a Black woman who is a mother, because that adds on a whole other load of connotations. But as parents collectively across the board, I can say, as I've spoken to, you know, other working parents, we've all been smiling, like the struggles we've had to go through to get a job, to hold a job, to work, the extra work that we've had to do to prove that we are as capable as our counterparts who aren't working. And now the entire world is working from home.
Yeah.
So in these moments where, you know, now everyone is collectively having to think of what this impact truly means on an individual scale, if you can do it on a global scale that keeps your business running, then you have no excuse for now not doing this at an individual employee level, because these have been the people collectively across the world who have kept your businesses going.
100%. And if an organization, an employer, a manager, whoever it might be, this entity still doesn't value people as individuals after this, then we all need to be collectively taking a stand on this, because it really is showing the brands and the businesses that care about individuals and those that really just don't.
But I think from this, it is those in those moments of silence, but everybody is watching.
Yeah.
So collectively, where you might have only heard about these in your groups or in your cliques because you're in that industry, and so, you know, professionals speak to each other, you know, over the water cooler, as it were. Now, because the whole world is having to use social media to stay engaged, to stay connected, to work, those kind of truths that never came out into the mainstream are now wide and clear and loud for everyone to see. So those who are honest, those who are genuine, those who are authentic, they are continuing to prosper. But the others who maybe were doing it as lip service, you know, some might be genuine, they didn't know, they didn't know the right path, and so they're now finding their way through adversity and they need guidance. But those, I think, who have always followed a certain path because that's how we do things. You know, now general public have an opinion, and have a very loud opinion, because it takes one, and then the ripple, you know, for so many things are spreading. And I think that if we lose that, that has come out of this time, I think that will be the biggest loss for this whole experience of actual unity. And a bit more humanity. You know, we as people needed to stop. I probably wouldn't like to have stopped under these circumstances, but at least it's given us all a moment to truly reflect about the space that we take up
in
this world.
And how we take that space up, and whether that's in alignment with who we are and all who we want to be.
And how we take that space, exactly.
Yeah. It's...
And should we take that space?
All of these questions, it's definitely invited introspection alongside sort of the riding. I ride the waves with it. I go through moments of calm, and like today has been a difficult day for me. So I just thought, you know what I do this all the time. I talk about to the people that I work with, my students, about addressing your needs. And I just couldn't focus. And I thought, right, what do I need in this moment? I need to be outside. I need to turn off my brain. And so I've been doing, my day to day has been mindfulness colouring, and that has served a purpose. And now I'm talking to you. And that will be my day to day. And I'm not berating myself for not doing the things that are on my to-do list. I'm doing what I can. And I think there's an element of when we go back into, for those of us who are in corporate environments, that might still be going on for some of us.
Yeah.
Being very difficult to focus and be productive in the way pre-CV19, because for many different things, maybe anxiety, unprocessed grief, whatever it might be, fear of the unknown, financial worries, health, whatever it might be. And for employers to be mindful of that in creating spaces where, you know, people can have that downtime.
Absolutely. And also, you know, the one that you missed, which actually is a really big thing, is guilt. You know, not because it's hard for us. You know, if I think about myself, you know, I have come from an amazing family, but, you know, I come from a background and a heritage where you kept things in the family. You didn't necessarily talk about it. You didn't talk about when you had issues. You know, my dad and I, we laugh about it now, but, you know, when we spoke on my journey of mental health, you know, and I'm honest that I had to divorce or separate from my parents for a while, and I moved out of our house to my grandma's, you know, and we would date each other. So they would come and they would have lunch with my mum one day and have lunch with my dad a different day for an hour, and then thank you very much, it's been really nice to see you, same time next week. Because, you know, my dad always used to say, why can't you talk to me? Why do you need to speak to, you know, a counselor or ever a stranger? And I was like, because part of the issue
is you.
And also, if you keep helping me, yeah. how am I going to learn to help myself?
Yeah, absolutely.
And be independent. And so, you know, it's also that continual, you know, with the guilt is that now we have, you know, if you're lucky to have good family, you're lucky to have good friends in this period, you will know at least one person who has lost their job or is in some real financial difficulty. You know, you may have unfortunately lost someone, or someone is really, really struggling with their health as a byproduct of, you know, catching the disease, or it's affected other health issues.
Yeah.
And so I know sometimes I have really struggled in creating, or not I should say creating, in remembering my own boundaries.
Yes.
During this time, because I'm so grateful to still have a job.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful to still be able to feed my children independently. Yeah. You know, childcare is what childcare, it's me, full-time parent, full-time, you know, worker. And then I have to remember to take care of myself at the same time. And so it's that guilt of remembering to take care of myself, remembering that I am a priority, alongside the wanting to support people and my friends who don't have what I have, of not wanting to overextend myself, you know, of being able to visit the other dependents of my family where we've had to, and being very, you know, strong in saying I can't actually do that right now, because right now my priority are my children.
Yeah.
And so they're on an even more vulnerable list than maybe some of my elders, our elders, that, you know, before I would go and see my grandma, or, you know, it was 3 months before I saw my parents. And that was simply because I hadn't seen them for a few weeks before we started quarantine.
Yes.
And I can't go to them.
Yes.
So they, once they were past all of theirs, they, you know, they came to us, and that was fantastic. But it took me 4 weeks and a jog from my therapist to say, maybe you should ask your parents to come to you, because I can see you're really struggling.
Yeah.
And so it's those moments that employers have a responsibility to their employees to be mindful of that at any given time. And this is just me, you know, at any given time, any of the employees could be going through a number of all the things you've raised, and how are they going to best support that transition of actually being able to work.
And what I hope comes out of this, you touched upon it earlier, is that, you know, there is that we are seeing more humanity, more honesty. Like when somebody asks you, how are you, rather than say, yeah, good, because you know that they don't want to really hear the truth. You know, I haven't got time. Yeah. It takes me more energy to have surface level conversations than it does for me to get in and talk about racism or homophobia, or just, you know, trauma. I find it far easier to go into these deep complex conversations than these surface level, I'm fine, thanks. And what I hope is that there is an element of that carries over into the workplace, so that if you're not fine, that you can say that without fear of retribution, or without fear that, well, you're incapable of doing your job. And I'm not talking about people who are really unwell and need to not be at working. I'm talking about, you know, the everyday stuff that that sits with us. Thinking you're not good enough, or you're not strong, or you're weak. Yeah,
absolutely. I think that has been the hardest, you know, those moments. I think maybe about week 3 or 4, because I was okay, as okay as I could be, maybe for the first month. But then, you know, people and my closest asking, how are you? And that was it. Those three, how scary is seeing just those three letters come through in a text? And I remember thinking to myself, okay, am I really honest?
Yeah.
Because that's a bit scary.
Yeah.
Telling the gospel truth of where my head is really at, do I just kind of carry on and coast and pretend that everything is fine? And I was brave, and I just completely laid it out and said, you know, I'm really struggling, this is going on. And I got such amazing support in a way that I don't really think of myself in that way. And it's making me stop and really value myself. I'm so good at doing it for other people, of being able to support other people.
Yeah.
I forget or I can never really root it down to one answer of what it is that I need. So now I'm just trying to not stop talking and to just voice it.
Great.
In the hope that through communication and talking with, you know, whoever I choose to speak to at that time, that a positive or at least some form of a solution will come out of it.
Clarity.
Yeah, you know, we are so often we are silenced because of others.
Yes.
Especially as Black women, you know, we are really, really silenced. You know, you and I, we talk about this often. And so I think it's in taking back that control of my own voice. It's in taking back that control of understanding my own power and how that impacts on other people, and choosing to do that in a positive way, but also in not being complicit. And I think, you know, we challenge where we can. I use my passing privilege where I can, and actually, you know, really use it. It comes back to those, sometimes we are held to a completely different standard to other people, despite doing the work and being, you know, equally as competent for a role. The steps that we might have to go through, regardless of the many identities that you carry with you. And I think that, you know, in times where, you know, we've just seen in the last few weeks how our Black and brown bodies are viewed around the world.
Oh, God, just disposable, desensitized, like animals, less than.
And how we speak on it. You know, I know when I saw, when I heard it, I couldn't be on social media. It's triggering.
It's painful.
It's painful.
It's very painful.
You know, it's we've had those moments of true, undeniable fear.
Yes.
Where we are so scared. We've had those moments where we have been vulnerable and we have shared how it's impacted and not been taken seriously, or people, you know, oh, they were a criminal.
Yeah.
What? Just
victim blaming.
Out running on a jog. And so, you know, it's trying to also, you know, when people who are seeing it and it's undeniable truth, you know, and how appalled and how, you know, hurt and embarrassed and ashamed they are in comparison, you know, to the lives they thought we lived.
Yeah.
And it's to those people that I really hope the sentiment stays.
When you say those people, who are you talking about specifically?
Anyone I think that doesn't identify as a Black or brown person. Those people, you know, people who I've seen who call themselves allies and active allies, you know, our white community, our leaders, you know, everyone who is appalled and you know, shares their horror and distaste for, you know, some very violent killings, some very violent deaths. But we haven't stopped talking about all the other killings. You know, when I look to the deaths of, you know, Breonna and Ormond, who passed in the last 2 weeks. But we've been telling you that, you know, Black trans women have been dying in numbers that are horrifying for the last year at least. And where's your outrage?
Mm-hmm. It's selective. The outrage is selective.
And so, you know, if allyship is true allyship, then all of my struggles, my being, and the barriers to me being my whole self should be an active part of your allyship. And I think that's the part as a person, as a human being, I try to channel in as positive a way as I possibly can through the work that I do, because it's hard sometimes to be in spaces where, you know, you'll get that typical one, but I don't see colour.
Oh, I haven't got time for that. I haven't got time. I can't have these levels. I can't have these kinds of conversations anymore. You know, if you're listening to this podcast and you still use that term, then go away and Google about why that is so offensive, how that dehumanizes, and how it's a microaggression. I'm not educating today. I'm not in the mood. Yeah.
I think the last time someone said that to me, I won't say where it was because I think there's some video footage.
Oh, Lord.
I do remember someone said to me afterwards, they came up to me and they said, oh my God, your face when she said that. And it the comment in itself was problematic because I said, your face when you said that, you know, I thought you were, you know, going to start a fight. And I said, but why? You know, just because I'm a black woman, doesn't mean that I'm aggressive.
Well, of course, it's a stereotype.
Doesn't, you know, so I, of course, I can tell you about yourself in the exact same language that you used when you said, I don't see colour.
Yeah.
You know, mine doesn't wash off. And I'm glad.
Do you know what I'm
surprised.
Find?
That's why I said, I'm surprised that you don't see colour. And I held up my hand and I went, because this doesn't wash off.
I find it such a nonsensical statement. In, do you know what? There is a study that summarizes why this statement is just so nonsensical. There is a study done with people who are blind, and they are doing tests with them to ascertain if they hold inherent racism with them. They are blind. They have inherent racism with them. They cannot see. So the whole sentiment just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Oh boy.
Yeah, that's followed by my also, this is very therapeutic today. Oh God, what's the other one? Oh, you speak so well.
Yeah, you're so eloquent.
You I really understood your point, the way that you articulated it. So powerful. How am I supposed to speak?
Yeah. I'm in this role, I'm educated, I've got expertise, I'm credible.
I've done my work.
Yeah.
I've done the work, I've earned the right to be here. So please explain to me
why you're surprised.
Why the difference in our skin tone? Because I notice that my fellow panelist or the counterpart that brought you into this situation where you heard me speak so well, you didn't make the same comment. In fact, you told them, oh my God, you were amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, that was so great, so powerful. So why do I only speak so well?
Yeah.
But, you know, and I think it's that energy. That when someone says, oh my God, I saw that, and you know, I thought you were going to react, why should that energy be left to me in those times? Yes. True allyship,
they should
is
be
someone else
with that.
Calling it out, or somebody else calling it in, or actually thinking about the impact of your questions when you are questioning me and other people of color, women of color, as panelists. That we are represented and that we see ourselves, but also that your questions don't rely on there is a word, it's not on disruption, on disrupting a whatever status quo or whatever you think it is in being reactive. That your questions are reactive to a situation, and so you're almost instigating something by a response. You know, I want questions where we're talking about struggles and challenges, but actually we're empowered to educate.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, I am a better speaker because of my children, because I'm thinking about how we give, but how we also take and absorb information. Do I have an opportunity to share some information by talking about my lived experience? Do I have an opportunity to help someone in a way that they may not have access to in any other means, and I should use that responsibly.
Yes,
that's a mantra to myself. But I would really like other people to think about the legacy that they leave behind when they speak, when they engage, when they hold these sessions. If I take part, what am I going to come away with? Yeah. And is this just okay, you were there and that was great? Or am I really going to leave this talk, this panel, this session thinking, oh yeah, actually I've got a focus. I've got a new way of thinking. I learned something. I unpicked something in myself that I didn't necessarily know. Or actually I learned something about myself that was a harsh truth, but it was necessary.
Yes.
And I can be all the better for it, because I think that is our very lived experience of who we are. Mm. We understand that, have understood that our whole lives. You know, I always say, my dad said to me at 9, you're black, you're female. It's going to be harder for you than it is for anybody else. So please don't grow up with a chip on your shoulder. Wow. And so there is nothing that I cannot do as long as I put my mind to it. And if it wasn't mine to gain, then it was a lesson and not necessarily a blessing, and the blessing is further down the road. Mm. And to not beat myself up. I know that you know, the vast majority of the world don't view the world in that way. So I understand the barrier that is the color of my skin. I understand the barrier that it comes from being a woman. Mm. I understand the barrier that comes from being a black woman. And that has never been a barrier for me.
Mm.
It's never been something that I've said to myself, I can't do that because of who I am.
Good.
I can't do that based on somebody else's perception. And in the learning, which, you know, we are segueing to the big conversation, but in the learning of my own journey, I guess, in the last 2 years, is being undeniably unapologetic about what I will not stand for.
Yes.
And the trauma of discovering that part of myself, which I didn't actually think I ever was, but I realize because of those experiences I have.
Can you share more about that?
I don't talk about this often.
Only if it feels okay for you. Yeah, only if it feels okay for you.
I understand what it's like to not be able to see yourself.
Yeah.
I understand what it's like to not truly be your whole self. You know, we talk about being your authentic self, and I'm just talking about being able to see myself.
Yeah.
Which sometimes is the first step. And so, you know, I've been involved in initiatives and things that I thought I had a place. I thought that, you know, my seat at the table was genuine and was based on me. And for the most part, you know, it was. Unfortunately, you know, I was in a situation where my being, you know, because I am me, my visibility comes with me. And I guess the skills of being a relatively okay public speaker and having an affinity, or at least a warmth with people, you know, the benefits of that were great. But the sharing space and my voice as a black LGBT woman being a voice that's preferred in space of possibly, you know, other LGBT counterparts who were white, made people really uncomfortable, and made people uncomfortable in a way that they were very vocal about how uncomfortable they were. They were very spiteful and vindictive in how they went about expressing that. And, you know, some people behaved in a way that not only erased my entire being, but actually made me doubt my own identity.
Wow, that's profound. I think Chloe is somebody who works fearlessly in campaigning for human rights. They're the human rights, as far as I'm concerned, but within the LGBT BTQ communities and worked with some well-known organisations. And one of the things that I found sobering, and I think it's what led me to finding you, was a report from Stonewall, mm-hmm. and I haven't got it in front of me, so I will link it in the show notes, that revealed how much racism there is within LGBTQ plus communities. And it's not community I'm in. I wasn't shocked because I know the power of white supremacy. Yeah. But I think there is a perception that if you already sit within an identity that experiences systematic discrimination on a regular basis and that impacts your very being, that there would be this element of empathy or understanding.
Oh, no.
But no. And so just to give a little bit of context, I think that's what you're talking about, isn't it? It's just being in space where you should have been safe and weren't.
I think I will hold my hands up and say, yeah, I was entirely naive. And also, I keep mentioning it and I speak about it often, is that passing privilege. So that access that allowed me, because of my job, because of my roles, because of my own visibility, to navigate through spaces that possibly a lot of other people who look like me may not have had access to. And so in some parts, my naivety is not recognizing the opposite side of what that looks like when you can't. But also
when you can't
pass, because my naivety was believing that we are all equal and that I had a welcome seat at the table and that it was my space to pass and navigate through, just like everybody else who looks like me. So that part is my naivety. And it was then being reminded quite vocally and verbally and in print that I was not welcome. And that I was only as useful as the strings that they determined I should move in and with and who to. And so even after all the pain and, a life decision that really truly impacted, because it's again coming back to that trigger of silence. And I think for me, when I speak about my mental health, for me, one of the big things that I can't do is to stay silent, because it's really dangerous for me. Getting lost in my own head is a really, really dangerous place. And so in having to stay silent, this is probably the most that I've spoken around it without actually talking about it in a long time, because I recognize that if I were to speak about it in its entirety and in its truth, it would be very dangerous for other people.
I understand that, and I'm mindful of that.
I'm actively making the choice to stay silent, not as a martyr, but because I'm a parent and I understand the idea of actually being yourself and knowing which space you can take up in life, and that you are taking up that space, is so important. And so important if you are from a more marginalized background, whether the margin simply only be that you're LGBT. If you have so many other identities layered on top of that, who you are and discovering who you are might be the defining thing of your entire existence. And everyone deserves the right to that.
And many people take that right for granted.
Or so many people speak on other people's behalf for that right. And so in my silence, I don't want to do that. I don't want to speak for other people. I can only speak for myself.
And
I choose to not speak. I may do one day.
Well, I was just gonna say, at the moment, because I feel like you probably will, but it just may not feel like the right time, or I don't
absolutely
know.
Absolutely.
I don't believe that you won't ever speak on it, and it's I don't believe
no
that.
I, but I think that I'm mindful, like you said. I'm so grateful in all that I do and in the connections that I have and the amazing people that I've been fortunate enough to meet within my own community, you know, that I do get to volunteer for UK Black Pride. You know, I can't say enough about them. And funnily enough, I had no idea when we did do that interview for What Does Pride Mean? That I did that with Lady Phil. I was like, oh my God, we did it together.
That's yes.
But she, you know, I know what she means, or I see what she means to a lot of people in the community, but I know what she means to me. Mm. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to call her my chosen family. She is an amazing friend, auntie to my sons, and someone who her counsel and her honesty and her truth for me, but also her belief in me is, I to not have it is a scary thought.
Wow.
You know, to have someone that, you know, will drag me when I need dragging. I'm a Virgo.
With love,
sometimes,
man.
It's sometimes really necessary. But you know, someone that just genuinely has my back and understands some of the barriers that I may face in life, and so wants to support and will help guide and steer. But that way that she does for me at an individual level, I watch her do it for hundreds and thousands. I watch her do it for the community here and at home and internationally. Someone who is consistent, but beyond consistent in a way that's in a book. She is humanly consistent. She is personally the way that she can connect with people at a human soul level.
Yes.
Is incredibly rare. It's incredibly rare. And so to just be able to experience that and her and UK Black Pride, especially in a time that we are now, having that sense of family and community, being able to support each other, be able to still support our community, to be able to create space for our community that will continue to be, and it comes back to that adversity of this is not something that we don't know.
Yeah,
you know, we understand of not wanting to be seen in the first place. So to create space and continue to create space, you know, and to have 10,000 people join us last year, you know, in Haggerston Park, and this year, however many people, whether it be one, and you know, I doubt that it would just be one, but you know, 1,000, 10,000. Join us virtually, and
perhaps
the things
more
that, you know,
even more.
The team, you know, the team, we're all collectively working towards that. You know, that sense of self, I think, is the part that I rediscovered through all of this, and I'm continuing to kind of hold at heart through this period now. You know, the people that we have to keep around us to kind of keep us safe,
well, and also it's a part of our healing, I believe, just having those people around us, because so often we have people around us who, you know, intentionally or otherwise cause us harm. So it's vital, literally vital. So I can't believe that we're 50 minutes in already. Oh my God, there's so many things I want to talk. We won't get through all of them. There'll be a part two. And what I do want to ask you about is just that, just to pick up on, there are layers to this about being silenced.
Yeah.
As a Black woman, and being silenced in terms of your LGBT identity as well, all of that interlinked. And I've spoken about it a little bit, about my own relationship with my health and my womb. Mm-hmm. And there is so much research out there around transgenerational trauma, stuff that's passed on from generation to generation, unexpressed psychological pain coming out as trauma in the body.
Yeah.
And it's a big question.
Yeah.
And layered on top of that, the upbringing of don't tell anybody your business.
Yeah.
Keep things to yourself.
Yeah.
Be strong. This is the way that it is.
I'm your parent, not your friend.
Oh, gee, I've got that one. So who do I talk to that I can't talk to a counsellor? I can't tell me mates because you'll say don't speak your business.
Yeah.
So you internalise it, right? And of course that has it doesn't just have a psychological impact on your well-being. Yeah. It has a physical implication on your physical health. And there are a lot of people in the Black community who have physical trauma within their womb. And I don't know if you want to share more about your own experience or not.
So you know, the timing of this conversation couldn't be more apt. I have PCOS, it's polycystic ovarian syndrome, which I have been diagnosed now for almost 15 years.
Wow.
The only reason I was correctly diagnosed, they thought I had appendicitis. So in Cliff Notes version of polycystic ovaries, it means that my ovaries are larger than the average woman. And when you are coming to your menstruation cycle, instead of the egg breaking apart and then therefore it becomes a period with PCOS, it can continue to float around your womb and it gathers into a cyst, which then collects and collects and collects, and it can explode. And so that's actually what happened.
Wow.
I had a cyst explode, and the pain was immense. And so they had me all lined up for surgery, and I stopped bleeding, and they couldn't work out what was going on. So in the end, they finally, after 3 days, gave me an ultrasound. And when they did the ultrasound, and they looked at my womb, and they saw I had polycystic ovaries. That's actually the only reason that I was properly diagnosed, is because I had an ultrasound. Otherwise, they probably would have operated and not actually seen anything, and that would have created a whole host of other things.
I don't know if you could operate without proper diagnostics, but, you know, here we go. Disparity in health outcomes. I don't know if we've got time for that today.
So then I'm trying to make this really short because, again, the experiences of a Black woman. So then I was given a gynecologist, and my gynecologist, I remember saying, I treated you like I treat all of my patients, not treating me as an individual patient. So he changed my pill from microkinin to Yasmin, which has a slightly higher level of estrogen. If you have polycystic ovaries, then you already have an imbalance of your testosterone and estrogen levels, so your hormone levels. And so basically, long story short, I ended up having a DVT from all this in my left leg. It was the size of a small football behind my left knee.
Wow. So unbeknownst, that's deep vein thrombosis.
Deep vein thrombosis, sorry, yeah. Unbeknownst to me, a piece had broken off and gone into my left lung, the size of a golf ball. And another piece had broken off and gone into my right lung. When they discovered all of this, and again, I have an amazing dad who I called, I was living in Manchester at the time, I said, I need to come home because I'm talking to these doctors they're not listening. He said, okay. And so he came, picked me up. We got on a train for two and a bit hours of me sat still with a DVT, which is dangerous in itself. And he said, what do you want to do? Do you want to go home and we'll go and see the GP tomorrow? Or do you want to go straight to the hospital? And I said, I want to go straight to the hospital.
Good.
They admitted me straight away. They said, if I hadn't have come today, I might not be alive tomorrow.
Yeah.
And they started me on warfarin. I was on 10 milligrams a day, and at 25 I had a premature heart attack because the cyst tried to go back the way it came, and this is all from not being treated correctly as a Black woman with polycystic ovaries. So throughout that period, and polycystic ovaries affects people in many different ways, but for me it means that my cycles are incredibly infrequent. Sometimes I can have a period every 6 months, every 3 months. It's only actually after I had both my sons that my periods were more frequent and I would get them every month or so. But with the impact of possibly the work and definitely in this situation of stress, my body has had an opportunity to completely slow down and completely stop. And for some of that trauma, as you mentioned, to really start to bring itself into the fore because my body doesn't have anything else distracting it.
Yes.
And so for the last 4 days, I've had probably one of the worst periods I think I've had in a very long time.
Wow.
And gone back to that 15 year ago experience of a cyst exploding because the trauma of this experience, as it is affecting so many of us in different ways, that my body has kind of just gone on a bit of a purge. And I could probably genuinely say that it is the impact of many different situations that has meant this is why it has been so violent. You know, it has been not wanting to get up, not being able to stand, you know, being violently sick yesterday. I didn't eat for 48 hours. And this is just my experience. And so even now, you know, I only spoke about it for the very first time. I don't think I ever speak about my poly. You know, for someone who's vocal, I don't think I ever speak about it. And I did a couple of days ago. I had so many friends that went, oh my God, I didn't realize you have it. I have it too. And so I asked the same question, like, what do you know? What have you learned? And we all, that's the only way that I've actually learned more about my diagnosis is actually speaking to other Black women or other, you know, women of color, because there isn't enough research.
No.
There isn't enough information. You know, the things that they don't tell you, that it's about your diet.
Yes.
It's about your weight. It's the things that you eat.
Yes.
And so in all of this, it's that even when you're trying to help yourself, when you're trying to be healthy,
there's barriers.
You know, access to information.
Mm.
You know, if you don't have the internet, even from the bits that you try and learn, there is then not a further study to say how this impacts us as Black women.
Because nobody's doing research and studies on us.
You know, how many friends, family members that I have, you know, that again, it's guilt and, you know, it's my own dealing with, but family members that, you know, I know have struggled to have children because, you know, it's endometriosis or so many other things. And, you know, my polycystic ovaries meant I was infertile for 8 years.
Yes.
You get used to the idea of the things that you can't do, the things that just aren't accessed to you. So that when you do finally get them, if, you know, that is your plot, however you become a parent, it means so much more.
Yes.
So it comes back to that of this whole original conversation. When we know the access that is not afforded to us, the access that we do have becomes even more important in the way that we use it and we apply it and we navigate through life, because we understand what it's like to not be able to not have it, to have it taken away. And so for me, that will always be the most authentic thing about a person is how they move and they navigate through life. How do you use what you have to benefit somebody else? Understanding that you might not always have it.
Yes.
You know, right now, we do not all have the freedom of free movement. And some people are all up in arms. You know, it's the worst thing possible. You know, what are you doing about it?
Yeah.
How are you making it better for somebody else? And if you're not bringing somebody else with you,
why not?
Please stop talking. Because for those of us across the board, across race, across gender, across identity, who are all trying to bring people together collectively as a community, the work is hard enough.
Yeah.
The work is hard enough. And we're not asking for anything other than for you to join us.
Yeah.
And share the load, share the wealth, spread the message. So it's no longer the responsibility of marginalized people to keep sharing their lived experience. In some ways, the truth's undeniable. You can see it, you can hear it, you can read it, you can watch it. Now we collectively need you to use your voice and share it for others. You know, yesterday was Ida Hobbit, the International Day
Against Homophobia,
Biphobia, intersexism and transphobia. Mm. You know, and the theme was breaking silence. it's never more than now. You know, it's never more than now. We need you to break the silence for LGBT people. We need you to understand the barriers, structural racism, systemic, and unpick it and unpack it with us. Mm. We need you to stay home, you know, stay home so that everyone can come out of this safer and healthier together. Because as we continue to have people that don't abide by the rules, this will only lengthen and lengthen and lengthen and lengthen, and it will impact on so many other people who, you know, don't get to say goodbye, don't get to have those moments. You know, we're in all of this, we're not talking about people, you know, we talk about well-being, but what do you do if you're someone who is naturally has suicidal tendencies? Yeah. And the routine of going to work is the only thing that's kept someone sane.
Gives you purpose.
It's all of those things, you know, and that's not selfish. That's, let's think about your fellow man, you know, in a way that we clap for our NHS workers and our carers. You know, we acknowledge that we have amazing people on the front lines, but they have always been on the front lines.
Exactly.
And they have always been there. So it's right to acknowledge the people that have always been there and will continue to always be there for us. But make sure that you're not just clapping.
Exactly. And you're taking action.
And that you're taking action. And that you are collectively trying to change policy. Yes. You know, that you're using your voice when you vote so that we won't be in situations where these same carers and NHS workers are being paid correctly, have benefits.
Or are unnecessarily dying because they have inadequate PPE.
There you go. You know,
I mean, I can't deal with a clapping, but my listeners know this already. but that's it. It's like we have to, you know, we're dealing with coronavirus. We're dealing with potential mental ill health. We're dealing with trauma within our reproductive health system. We're dealing with this stuff on top of systemic racism, on top of systemic discrimination. And so for those who are wanting to be allies, it's moving along with us and not allowing, not just saying, oh, I'm so shocked this is still happening in 2020 and then getting on with your day. It's like, how can I, are you checking in first? Are you okay? Like recognizing, are you okay? Because I'm seeing the stuff on the news and you're in that community. Are you okay? How can I hold space for you? As a bare minimum.
Yeah. I have this, you know, through work, I in one of the sessions that I do, it's about allyship. And it's a point, you know, be mindful of what's going on in real time, that you might have to be more mindful of how you show compassion and empathy to people who identify in that particular community based on what the news tells you, what might have happened, and so therefore might impact on a collective community, and be that first step. Don't wait for them to come to you with their trauma. Go to them and show and apply that compassion and show and apply that empathy. It's the same thing. You know, we say call it out when we see someone doing something bad, or call it in, but you're right, check in.
Yeah.
Check in on the people that matter to you. Don't wait. Like, we don't actually have the time to wait. Those connections of the people that really, really mean something to us have been sustaining, at least I know for myself, my mental health, my well-being through this time. What it's also done, you know, like you alluded to, is it's shown you who's really here for you.
Oh, yes.
And who isn't. Who's only here for lip service, I should say, and who's here on the peripheral.
Yeah.
You know, those people that, you know, you now know. It's funny, I was laughing to one of my best friends this morning. Those people that you need to just put on a soft mute and a check, like, oh, hi, really great to hear from you. And they're the people that get that, yeah, we're well, thank you. Thanks for inquiring. How are you? And keep it moving. Mm. Because I know you're going to use my business to go and instigate something else further on the line. And I don't need to, you know, I'm not bringing that energy. If your energy is not for the betterment of me and what I believe in, because you know that I will do exactly the same for you, then the connection request isn't necessarily, you know, verified. Like, thank you very much for your interest, but I will keep you on read because I'm more mindful now of me.
Absolutely. And that energy that we're so busy putting out there needs to go inward for our own healing, because when we put it inwards and we show up as ourselves, the impact that we have on others is exponential. So I'm
because
learning that.
Yeah. Because we're too, I'm like you, I'm too used to giving away my energy to others. I don't necessarily know how to stop that. I don't think I ever want to not be able to not be there for others.
But it's boundaries, Chloe.
Yeah, I don't remember to keep re-energizing for myself or, like you said, put those boundaries in place where I'm like, no, actually, I can't do that this time. Yeah. Or I'm really sorry. I know this was the deadline, but actually today is not a very good mental health day for me. Yeah. So can this wait? Or I've asked such and such colleague to move it forward and I'll check in with you in a couple of days. Absolutely. You know, and not answering the phone when someone calls and, you know, it's an important call, but I'm like, I'm not in a great headspace to speak or, you know, I'll be honest. There are sometimes a work call that should be a voice call, but it's a video. I'm like,
No video. But it commands so much more energy from us. Absolutely. It's just you just don't need that kind of stress in your life. Oh boy. Oh wow. To round up the conversation, and I talk about this a lot in my work, especially to black and brown women that I work with, about building resilience, meeting our unaddressed needs, speaking on what those needs might be, and the importance of practicing joy when we are faced with adversity so often. So what do you do to practice joy, Chloe?
I'm learning more to celebrate myself. I'm surrounding myself with, you know, true sisterhood, which is a thing that I struggled with for a very long time, you know, in that identity of being a black woman who navigated through very white spaces. What does that actually look like? Who am I? And, you know, having more black and brown friends and being really joyous in my heritage and my identity, you know, laughing and being open with my friends. My ability to laugh and my abundance in my own giggling and joy with my friends, those true belly laughs, that is keeping me happy and healthy, but also being mindful in my own quiet space. You know, I talk about being quiet in my mind, but actually stopping to be quiet in my movements, I'm finding is giving me some real joy at the moment. You know, a 15-minute bath with a Lush bath bomb of re-energizing and invigorating myself and coming out and being just a tiny bit more balanced, a tiny bit happier and a tiny bit healthier. But I would mostly say my joy has come from being unapologetically 150% myself.
Oh.
I'm grateful that in my commitments outside of work, that I am seen as my whole self.
Yes.
But also, you know, in my job, I work for an organization that celebrates my whole identity.
Yes, you do.
And in fact, you know, they're like, we don't really like talking, so you can do all the talking and we're happy. So I think that, you know, where I've been told that visible presence, actually, it makes us uncomfortable. Work like, no, go and do some more. Actually, part of your task is a bit more in the mainstream. Like, go and do that interview, that's okay. And so it's, you know, remembering to stay humble, but being celebrated. And I think too often in the workplace, Black women are not truly celebrated, especially by people that aren't necessarily Black women.
Yeah.
So to be celebrated by my own is powerful and wonderful and healing. Having the added celebration of being celebrated by others for being myself,
yes,
and that is great, and that I should continue to do that, and I should empower others to be themselves,
yes,
is truly the full circle, you know. And that's the part that I hope anyone that I come into contact with, whether it be in a work capacity, in a personal capacity, or even that it's just you heard me speak, I hope that in some way, now knowing that I can live my truth finally,
yes,
at my 30 late plus whatever.
We're here.
It's all right. I don't actually look my age.
No, you don't.
I get
that
told often, so that's okay. you know, I am living my best life truly, and I think that's the thing that I want everyone to, you know, in the spaces that we can navigate, in the things that we can control, this you can control.
Yes.
And you know the spark of truth about yourself.
Yeah.
Even if you're not necessarily listening, we all know because we feel it.
Inherently.
Our bodies have a way of telling us. It's the confidence comes from believing that and applying that. So my thing is find the spark, and whatever you need to do to help it grow in whatever possible way you can, focus on that.
Mm.
You know, in this moment, before the world turns at speed, find your spark and really apply it to the best possible way that you can.
Thank you.
Yeah,
beautiful. Chloe, I could talk to you for hours. I want to publicly say thank you for... I think we've only met once, haven't we, at my show?
Yeah.
I feel like I've known you for so long.
But it's what we should tell... Let's be honest. Let's tell the listeners. It's not for want to try.
I know.
Because we arranged to meet so many times. We're like, okay, let's put it in the diary. I can do this day. And then it's like, Chloe, I'm really sorry. I can't. Can we reschedule? And I'm like, okay, no, it's fine. And I'm like, Nova, let's meet. And you're like, okay, it's in the diary. And I'm like, Nova, the kids, I'm really sorry. And so we do this. We do this back and forth.
We do this dance. Yeah.
I think even on the day of your show, I came from one engagement and I was going to the other, but I was like, there is no way I'm not coming to her show today. So, you know, I'm making it a mission when we are in more human interaction, because actually, as we discovered, we're not that far away from
which is absolutely hilarious. Yeah. But we were even trying to meet in March, just before we were all locked down. But you are incredible. Thank you for, you just show up. You show up and you support, and it's felt.
You know, I'm vice versa, Nova, because you stick your head above the parapet in ways that aren't necessarily healthy in telling the truth.
Yeah.
And we see that and we know that. And, you know, you consistently call it out. And the side that people probably don't see when they see the, you know, the fluffy piece and they understand and they see you in a limelight, you have been doing this work for a very long time.
Yeah.
This is not your first rodeo.
No.
And so we appreciate the fact that in using the louder voice that you now have because of some of that work, that you always use it for us, and we appreciate and love and will protect you the whole way through.
Thank you.
So yeah, feelings entirely mutual.
Oh God, I'm welling up. Thank you so much. I'm receiving it. Thank you. It's been a joy speaking with you. Thank you for bearing so much of your soul and speaking so honestly and open with me today. It's a pleasure to hold space for you. And if anyone wants to connect with you afterwards, can you just let them know where they can find you?
Yeah. So I, my socials are simply Ms. Chloe on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me through work, www.mytwork.com. My DMs are open. I'm happy to speak to anyone. Let's connect as community and people.
Thank you so much. Take care of you.
So much love. Bye.
Bye. Oh, what joy Chloe is. Gosh, that conversation is so rich. If you're in a position of leadership and you're listening to this, I think we've given you some nuggets of wisdom how you can start to foster better inclusion and start to care about your staff and prioritise their well-being and looking at them as humans with differing needs and all coming from different starting points. You've just been given a free masterclass from Chloe and I. You're welcome. She's just full of so much wisdom, and I really hope you enjoyed the depth of our conversation, because to me it just it really encompasses how beautifully diverse we all are as human beings and how layered we all are depending on our social location. When I talk about our social location, that's, you know, the different identities that we carry: being a woman, being heterosexual, being gay, being a mother, being bisexual, being of a certain age, being pregnant, being of a certain class. All of these things impact our ability, and they influence how we show up. They influence how we're perceived. And starting to look at each other as individual beings really helps us to find ways to build resilience. Just so much richness there. And I hope it gives you an insight into what it's like to navigate this world when you are Black and you have everyday life on top, all of these identities, all of these things on top. It impacts mental health when you continue to experience racism and systemic racism on top. So fascinating, so layered, so much richness there. Really, really do reach out, connect with Chloe afterwards. I'm going to leave links in the show notes on how you can reach her. And yeah, again, as always, if this podcast resonates with you, please leave a review. You know what to do. And if you are feeling called to lean in and do anti-racism work so you can show up as a better leader, as a better human, as a better parent, as a better friend, then you know my online anti-racism course is waiting for you. I'm going to leave the links in the show notes. We cover all of this and more. Courageous Courage Ally Edition starts the first week of June. Early bird rate will end on that soon as well. So if you're procrastinating, now's the time to make a decision. But thank you for tuning in. This was a long one, but an important one. So my homework for you today is, what does kindness look like in your allyship? How can you show up today? How can you be a better ally today? And how can you gift a random act of kindness? Going to have to be a bit more creative now. But how can you offer a random act of kindness? That's all from me. Take care of you. Connect with me over at Nova Read Official. Once again, you know what to do. If this episode has resonated with you, please leave a review. Take great care.